and business industry and jobs to order. We have three bills on the agenda today. The first one is Senator Kielash, State Building Code Lead Prevention Requirements. Senate File 3128. Welcome to our committee, Senator, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chair.
You have a delete all amendment?
I do have a delete all I'd like to offer, the A1 amendment.
Okay. We'll pass it out. We'll go off of that. We can't adopt it.
Okay.
We need another person or two, but we can assist the bill, the delete all amendment.
Mr. Chair, there's one amendment to that we had this discussion about just outside the door just now, and that is moving on line 1.8, changing the effective date to February 1st, 2011. And excuse me, and also at 129?
122 and 129.
122 and 129, I'm
sorry. We'll make the note. Everybody see that? It's February 1st instead of... Okay, you can start explaining the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Sam Walseth. I represent the Sustainable Resources Center and appreciate Senator Kielash helping us to get this facilitating a process to get this legislation to the table here today. What's happening, Mr. Chairman and members, is the Federal Environmental Protection Agency is about to implement a new lead work rule. It goes into effect on April 22nd. That rule will require companies working for hire doing renovations on targeted properties, which is essentially pre-1978 properties, child-occupied facilities, to go through a training course to make sure that when they are renovating those properties, they're doing so in lead-safe work practices. So that rule is going to go into effect here very soon. What we're trying to accomplish in this legislation is a little bit of accountability to make sure that those people working for hire to do this work are, in fact, meeting that requirement of that federal rule. And what this requires is that they essentially, you know, can submit their certification to the Department of Labor and Industry, and in exchange, Labor and Industry can make sure that they have a link on their website to the federal EPA website indicating whether or not contractors have met that requirement. Mr. Chairman, that's, in a nutshell, what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. There's been a lot of conversations between builders, electrical contractors, laborers, et cetera, and the Department of Labor and Industry. I do think Labor and Industry would like a slight clarification on the record, just with the language before us. I think they're good with it, but they'd like to get just a little bit of clarification on the record.
Okay. Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, committee members, on lines 118 through 119, describes that any firm or contractor working on a structure must have provided to the commissioner proof of certification as required in this subdivision. In discussion with Senator and the proponent, is that means that they can describe to us what their name is, and so we can check on the federal website to make sure that they have their certification, so we can verify that before we issue their license. I just want to confirm what the intent of that is, so we don't have to actually have them submit to us the certification, but at least we can verify their certification.
So the language is all right then?
Chair, yes it is.
Okay, we have a quorum. We're going to have Senator Latz will move the AE1 amendment as the date change will be to February 1st in the two lines mentioned. Three lines, the date. Three lines. 122 I missed. On the Latz amendment, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Anybody, the code people are all right with this? Anybody opposed to this, what we're doing here today?
Mr. Chair, there's been a lot of discussion between the contractors and the department about what making this language conform with the federal laws.
Well, it sounds like you did your homework ahead of time, which we like in this committee, and work it all out, so that sounds good. Senator, is there any need for anybody else to visit with us? I think it's going pretty good, so.
Very quickly, this is Karen Lanier, L-I-N-N-E-R. I'm with the Builders Association of Minnesota. I'm the Director of Codes and Research. And Chairman Metzen and members, I just want to confirm that we appreciate the effective date of this law. We also appreciate, the contractors appreciate, having a mechanism, especially this website established, where anyone can go see who is certified by the EPA, because this is really an all-encompassing law. And we appreciate, for our members that are going to get certified and are doing it right, there's a way to keep the uncertified people honest. But I just want to reiterate what Mr. Joachim just said. If this language says any firm or contractor working on the structure must have provided to the commissioner proof of certification as required in the subdivision, did I understand you, Mr. Joachim, that you that means they need to be registered at the EPA website? And we don't have to change the law to have it say that. Yeah, so there doesn't have to be a piece of paper submitted to the
Mr. Chair, I can answer that.
Kilos.
Yes, it does mean that. And the reason for that is we're trying to avoid paperwork for the department, which adds a fiscal note to this. So they have to submit to the EPA according to federal rulemaking. And so this just uses that resource for the commissioner and enforcement to find out whether or not that person is certified. And they're required to have the certification on them at on any job site.
Chair and committee members, thanks for that clarification.
Okay, sounds good. Senator, no rulemaking or anything in here?
No.
Going to go straight to the floor. Senator Lantz moves it. At about 3128 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the floor. Discussion? Senator Perry.
Chairman, Senator, is there a cost to the firm or the contractor to be certified?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kelly.
There is a single day training for this certification. It is a requirement by the Fed, so it's not that we can change that. It's going to have to be done. This is just helping conform state laws to be able to enforce and oversee the federal. I suspect that contractors will have the opportunity to train their whole crews so that they have flexibility. It only requires that one person with the certification be on the job site.
Okay. Or on the Lantz motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Senator Tavassoni, are you ready with the Senate File 1246? Rehabilitation counselors for the blind certification requirement.
Racer, I can tell you that. We do that.
Joyce doesn't need your help.
Temperature.
Who are you, Joyce? Huh?
Well, I'm fine.
Have you done this before?
A time or two.
I know.
I'm sure.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm sure she sees Thank this bill you. Way more clearly than I do, Mr. Chairman.
That's DMP.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1246 is a bill that is referencing certification for rehabilitation for counselors for the blind and outline some provisions and some ways to get there. And I think I should let my witnesses talk first, and then I think we have an amendment that may go on the bill, but go ahead.
Sure. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joyce Scanlon, and today I'm speaking on behalf of Blind Incorporated, a consumer-directed training program which provides adjustment to blindness training emphasizing positive beliefs and meaningful alternative techniques necessary to assist blind people in leading productive lives along with their sighted peers. Blind Incorporated, the BLIND is an acronym for Blindness Learning in New Dimensions. We are in support of Senate File 1246 for a number of reasons. First of all, there is no provision for blindness-related training for staff hired by Services for the Blind to work with people seeking services from the agency. Therefore, historically, we've seen a variety of approaches to staff training, depending upon the director and directions from administrators higher up in the bureaucratic structure of the department. Sometimes based on one thing or another, whim sometimes, sometimes based on a lack of understanding of the value and purpose of such staff training. Most of the time over the past 40 years that I've been around longer than that, but 40 years, there has been no training at all. At other times, staff training in adjustment to blindness has ranged from 2 2-week periods to 6 weeks, and currently it's 7 weeks, depending upon the persuasion of the director of SSB. Now, you may think that because SSB counselors have master's degrees, that they've studied blindness thoroughly in their academic courses. This is not true. The very few hours of blindness-related training in academic programs focuses solely on the medical aspects of blindness, almost nothing on the adjustment to blindness or the relevant techniques blind people need, or an emphasis on changing attitudes toward blindness. What happens is that most rehabilitation counselors come to SSB with very little knowledge or understanding of blindness. Yet, they're hired to work with a full range of blind people, from newly blinded to those who may already have clear ideas of what they want in life. Now, there are states with mandated training programs for agency staff, and their placement records are far superior to those states where no training in blindness matters is required. The Iowa State Agency Serving Blind People has a 6 months training program. Nebraska has a 12-week program, and New Mexico also has a mandated program for its staff working with blind people. Minnesota should also have a mandated program for SSB staff. Then perhaps the Federal Rehab Services Administration wouldn't be investigating Minnesota's placement, its very poor placement record. So please pass Senate File 1246 so that blind people of Minnesota can have assurance that they will be served by fully qualified and trained staff.
Thank you.
Another young lady is coming forward, okay, Senator.
We have one more.
Behind you.
Okay. Over here.
She asked if she could... Good afternoon and welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
You should stay.
Thank you. Is there a microphone? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Dunham. I am the president of the National Federation of the Blind, and I'll be very brief because Joyce has quite eloquently covered much of what I was going to tell you. I haven't been around for the 40 years quite yet, but I have seen quite a lot of changes in the training programs at State Services for the Blind. The rehabilitation counselors that we're talking to you about have a very powerful role in the rehabilitation process for people who are blind, who are trying to get skills and trying to get good attitudes so that they will be able to hold down a job and live independently. When we talk about rehabilitation services, we're talking about how to read and write, how to walk around independently, how to use a computer when you can't see. These are all really important services. And, of course, having a positive attitude is absolutely essential. So if these counselors don't have training, then they bring to their work the same kind of misconceptions and fears that the general society has about blindness. So how are they going to help blind people overcome those issues and go on and lead productive and successful lives? Joyce mentioned the changing training. In the early part of this decade, there was a decision made at SSB that there would be no requirement for new hires to be trained. In 2004, this was changed. A program was reinstituted, but the provisions were pretty minimal, and very soon it became clear that they were inadequate at best. And we, in our role, the National Federation of the Blind is a consumer organization, advocacy organization, and we assisted quite a few people with situations in which it was very clear that their counselor really needed to have some better background in the blindness knowledge, et cetera. So when this, because of consumer input and even input from SSB staff, starting in 2009, SSB began to work on expanding the training program. We were pleased to see the improvement. It's certainly a step in the right direction. There are things that are currently not covered in the policy that we would certainly like to see as part of the training. But we, above all, we are concerned to make sure that nothing can happen as happened in the earlier part of this decade, that if it should happen that an administrator comes to be an authority over SSB who doesn't understand the value of blindness training, they can't make decisions that would roll it back. So we've agreed to some compromises in the language, and we hope that you will pass this bill. Thank you.
Well, you have to get this started, and you can always come back and fix it up if you'd like later. But let's.
Did you see that toy she's got? That's just great, isn't it? That toy she's got there, it's just great. I would never know how to use it. I think there's a question, Mr. Chairman, from Senator Bonoff. This toy here, Mr. Chairman, I was talking about.
Talking about the machine there?
The machine she's got, yeah. I have no idea how it works, but it's great.
It's tricky.
Uh-huh.
Like a Braille computer.
Let's hope you don't need one, Senator.
Let's hope I don't need one. Just
if you do, you'll do fine.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
We got to get this amendment on. You've got on the bill, it says effective August 1st, 2009.
There's an A3 amendment, I believe, Mr. Chairman.
I think we're past that.
Mr. Chairman, I just had a question.
Yeah, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering Ms. Dunham? Did I say that right?
Yes.
If you could just tell us about your machine, because it is interesting.
It's very simple, short. Kind of like a PDA that has a Braille display on it. I can take notes, do email, calendaring program, et cetera. But being able to read Braille is pretty important to be able to use it. So.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And I don't know if you noticed Ms. Senator Bonoff. I don't know if you noticed Ms. Scanlon's testimony, but it was all on a Braille sheet over here also.
Wonderful.
Yeah. With a right old-fashioned slate and stylus.
I still don't leave home without mine.
So. So, Mr. Chairman, I believe that an agreement has been reached, and there's an A3 amendment to this bill. That
I think the department wanted the A3 amendment also to.
Yes, and I think everybody's okay with it. So, if
you will
pass out the A3 amendment, I will move the A3 amendment.
On that, Thomas on the A3 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Hey, this is a comfort language. The department's all right with it, and the dates are changed. So what else?
I think that's...
Anybody in the audience wish to be heard on this bill for or against? Anybody opposed it? Okay, against is opposed. Senator Thomasoni, let's go straight to the floor.
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
I would think so.
Unless you want to put it on the consent calendar. Maybe not.
Why not?
I don't think there's any objection.
All right. Thomasoni, Senator Thomasoni moves that Senate File 1246 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Before the vote, Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, I just have a quick question. Will this have any kind of impact on the academies in Faribault, the school for blind. I just need to ask that if it would affect any part of that at all.
No.
The Academy for the Blind is under the Department of Education, a completely separate entity in government, so wouldn't have an effect.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that there wouldn't be any kind of crossover problems whatsoever between the two. Okay, thank you.
Time is on the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 So motion prevails. Thank you very much. Senator Sparks.
So much admiration for these people. It's amazing.
Senate File 2759, State Building Code, Municipal Enforcement. Senator Sparky. Oh, Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member, for taking time out of the committee today to hear Senate File 2759. I know that many of you have heard about this issue, and so hopefully we're going to try to air it out today. But there was a recent court opinion that came out, and before this opinion, every property in the city was required to meet certain minimum safety standards as required by City Council's property maintenance codes. After the opinion, however, Mr. Chair and members, those minimum safety standards are different for each building depending on when it was built. Buildings built before the 1972 State Building Code may have no minimum safety standards. So what we're attempting to do with the bill that's in front of you today is to try to deal with some of those issues regarding the ambiguity and confusion surrounding the current law that needs to be fixed. The 2010 edition of Model Code will be published in either March or April of 2011. At that time, the Department of Labor and Industry will begin the normal code adoption process through rulemaking at that time, which takes about 2 years approximately. Until they're able to do this, we feel that Senate File 2759 would be a good stopgap measure intended to provide some certainty for cities, landlords, renters, and homeowners by returning to the pre-Morris versus Sachs set of rules. And I do have a couple testifiers that will give you some more examples and discuss the bill a little bit more, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Henry Reimer with Minneapolis Inspections Department. This bill is intended to restore the municipality's authority to enforce property maintenance codes, a situation that was thrown in severe doubt and threat by the 2008 Supreme Court decision. The legislation that is currently being considered by the committee is a result of efforts and is proposed by the League of Minnesota Cities, the Metropolitan Cities, the state's building officials, the state's housing code officials, as well as the City of Minneapolis and City of St. Paul. The impact of the decision was an interpretation of the state building code that determined that the state building code preempts the field with respect to housing and property maintenance regulations. What that means is the building code is the standard to be applied. Municipalities are not allowed to have their own maintenance standards. The Supreme Court's decision stated, quote, even a provision that is merely additional and complementary to a provision in the state building code is prohibited. So municipalities are not even allowed to have provisions that are merely additional and complementary to the building code. This is a big problem for us because the state building code is not a maintenance code. The state building code allows only reactive enforcement to situations rather than a proactive or preventative action. Just one example of that and how that's problematic for us. Looking at heating systems, and in Minneapolis and in many cities and towns across the state, we are looking at a lot of conversions of single-family homes from owner occupancy to rental. This is a result of the foreclosure crisis. We are looking at situations where the heating plants in those single-family homes are
the responsibility of the property owner, the landlord, but those utilities are being paid for by the tenant. The landlord does not have the financial motivation to ensure that those heating systems are operating efficiently because they're not paying the utility bills, the tenants are. Under the state building code, we are required to wait until that heating plant malfunctions, creating a potentially very dangerous situation before we can do something. We would prefer to be proactive and have a maintenance standard that would require landlords in these situations to periodically inspect and to maintain those systems in efficient operational condition. And that is a safety standard, but it's also an energy efficiency issue. We view it as one part of a green initiative that we're looking at in Minneapolis. So we want efficient operation of these heating systems and safe operation of those heating systems. Now, that's just one example. I have a lot. I'm not going to go into those unless there are questions. A lot of examples of where the state building code is inadequate for us to deal with maintenance issues at rental properties. The proposal maintains the full superiority of the state building code. No municipal laws will be allowed to conflict with the state building code. The state building code maintains full superiority. The state building code specifically states that the building code in place at the time the building was constructed are the standards to be applied to that building. So those provisions of the state building code aren't being changed. We are not seeking to retroactively enforce 2010 building code standards on a building constructed in 1960, for example. This is a particular problem in this day and age due to the foreclosure crisis, and we are seeing that not just in Minneapolis and St. Paul, but the foreclosure rate now in the suburban area has grown to an alarming rate as well as outstate. We now more than ever need to have maintenance standards for rental properties in the state. Now, I know that there is an alternative or amendment that I believe will be proposed today, and we view that as a good faith effort, and we very much appreciate that, although our position is that we prefer the original language that the committee is considering. We are not there yet with the amendment that will be offered. We are reviewing that language, and we just became aware of the latest specific language of this proposal today. So we want to make sure that we can deal with issues that are not specifically addressed in the state building code, that the language doesn't preclude us from doing that. For instance, the state building code covers egress doors, a door to a property, but it doesn't say that you have to have locks on those doors. So we've got a rental property owner on a single-family home who hasn't provided locks on that door for their tenant. If we are not allowed to have a local standard that you provide locks on those doors, if we're confined to the state building code, we can't require locks on that property. And so we want to make sure that we can do things that are complementary and additional to the state building code and that we remove that preemptive effect so that we can do that. Now, if the original proposal makes it through committee or if the amendment makes it through this committee, we're going to continue to engage with the industry who is proposing the alternative or who has been working and advocating the alternative to bridge the gap prior to Friday's committee hearing because I think we are getting closer, and I think ultimately we are all interested in achieving a very we all have agreement on some of the concepts, and the ultimate outcome of this is that municipalities not have their own building codes and we have a patchwork. We are not interested in that. They certainly are not interested in that, but we do want to make sure that we have maintenance provisions that we can enforce to make sure housing is safe in this state, and I believe that they have that interest as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I think everybody has an interest in safety. What's the amendment, Senator Salzman? Senator Salzman first.
I point, Mr. Chair, I do have the A2 amendment. I'm not sure if Senator Sparks has someone else who wants to speak in favor of the bill before I you know, move this amendment. That's why we're pausing. But I'd be happy to pass it out at this time so that everyone could see what it does. I guess that I am a little concerned about the fact that we create this patchwork, because I think in this committee we've talked about having some sort of standard so that no matter where you are in the state, we have these state codes, that they are consistent. And even within the metropolitan area, one city may require something here and something there that is different. So this provision, I believe, does allow the cities to require properties to be maintained as the cities desire, but it would not permit cities to exceed the uniform state on building code, which the cities say they do not want to authorize. And yet I did hear the statement of in addition to, which seems to be exceeding, you know, what is currently in law. The original bill would allow cities to exceed, and so by striking, you know, different from and adding in conflict of, that to me is very vague. What does in conflict, in that it's not against, but it could be in addition to. So I truly appreciate that our cities are dealing with these issues. I am very much aware from personal experience with, you know, folks who own rental properties, that they are making important investments in many communities and trying to improve properties. And so I think we need to be clear with them that there's some sort of uniformity, and yet our cities have to be able to enforce some of these things. So I know that the Realtors Association and Ms. Berger, I think, may be here to address some of those concerns. So I would suggest that if there's a willingness to work on this, perhaps if we could add the amendment and work on that amendment as it moves forward to another committee, that would make me more comfortable in terms of supporting this bill. And again, I really appreciate the problem. So I think it needs to be dealt with, but if we could find some comfort language to continue the discussion would be helpful.
Have you looked, let's get some discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Saltzman, I think that I agree with you, and I just want to applaud all the groups because I know that this has been a very difficult issue. It's not just an issue that came before us this year. And I do want to applaud all those entities that have been working very hard to try to come up with some compromise. I agree, maybe this doesn't get us all the way there, but I think it's getting quite a bit further down the road. I know that Deputy Commissioner Joe Aikman has been active in it, both the realtors and some of the multi-housing folks. And if they want to come talk a little bit about it, they can certainly do that. But I think this keeps us moving. And again, like Senator Metzen said, we all want to make sure that these properties are safe and well maintained, so that's what the real goal is here.
Okay, this any further discussion? Anybody in the audience on this amendment? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Sparks, and your testifier. The example you gave about the lock on the outside of a rental property, is that something that's prohibited with this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, having just received this amendment language earlier today, I am moderately concerned with that. I do think that there's definitely value in uniform rules, but there are numbers of areas that the state building code does not cover. It doesn't cover door locks. It doesn't cover floor coverings and kitchens. It doesn't cover bathroom sinks. It doesn't cover maintenance of heating systems. There are a number of things that it doesn't cover. And if, in the interest of statewide uniformity, we are not allowed to deal with those things at a local level in addition to the building code, then that would be problematic for us. But we are prepared to follow the committee's will, whatever it is.
Sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Todd Lilgenquist, Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. I'll keep my comments directed toward the amendment, since that seems to be what's before the committee. We believe the amendment addresses the stated concerns that the cities have brought forward. The cities state that they, after the Supreme Court decision, the Morris v. Sachs opinion, that their ability to enforce property maintenance has been restricted. We don't believe that to be the case in our interpretation of the case. But in good faith in bringing something forward in some comfort language, we believe that this addresses that concern. It says that cities have the ability to enforce property maintenance for existing components or systems, and that's an interesting distinction to make in there. So if someone has a property owner, say a 1970 property, for example, adds a component that is not required under that building code under which it was built, they would still be required to maintain that element, that component or system, up to the standard of good repair. So that's that. For the lock example, I think you'd be very hard pressed to find any, especially in Minneapolis, any rental properties that are equipped without any locks. If they are equipped with a lock, a 1905 home, say, for example, that the building code does not require a lock, it has to be maintained in good repair. So the first element of that, I think, you'd find virtually no properties without equipped with an exterior lock. If they are equipped with a lock, it has to be maintained in good repair. We have serious concerns about the in conflict with language. We believe that that seriously undermines the uniformity of the building code. It takes a step back from the direction that the legislature has consistently pushed forward on, saying the state should be regulated by uniform building code. We've had conversations with Assistant Commissioner Tom Joachim, and he believes that this language, the Salzman Amendment, addresses the stated concerns of the cities. But the second half of that that sentence says that they cannot require a property to exceed the code under which it was built. So it maintains the uniformity of the state building code. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair, sounds to me like there's some consensus around the amendment. I would state that I would have preferred the original language because, you know, it seems to me that we ought to give latitude towards our local units of government to, as long as it's not in conflict with what they're doing, state building codes, we ought to trust that they'll work that out. So I'm disappointed that we're amending it, but I will go with the will of the committee.
Senator Carlson, did you have a – you had your hand up a minute ago. And okay, Senator Latz.
I'm sorry I missed part of the discussion here, but I think I'm familiar with some of what's going on already. And I spent 9 years on a city council, and St. Louis Park has an aging housing stock. And without the ability for St. Louis Park to tailor its own requirements in this area, I think our community would be in a lot worse shape. The value of our housing would be in a lot worse shape. We have a lot more deterioration. We'd have more mobility. Our schools would be in worse condition. I mean, a whole host of community value surrounds the quality of the housing stock and the buildings that are there. I think each community has to have the opportunity to tailor its own rules above and beyond a floor that would be set statewide. And I don't think that we ought to be interfering with that ability. I don't think it's a matter of do we have a uniform statewide process or don't we, and are we concerned about building costs or ability to comply? I mean, I for 9 years heard people complain about the St. Louis Park requirements from people that were building, but I also knew that the community, the residents of St. Louis Park, strongly supported the fact that St. Louis Park raised the bar and thereby preserved the value of the buildings and the housing stock in particular in St. Louis Park. And frankly, I wouldn't want to do anything that would undermine a municipality's ability to do that and to tailor it to their own community needs.
I think that's particularly true, Senator Latz, in the first ring suburbs, I believe, where the housing stock has really been changing lately, you know, the last 2 years. How do you do? You have an answer? You're nodding your head. What do you want to say something?
Yeah.
Say something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the Supreme Court decision dealt with specifically was building code provisions. It did not deal with property maintenance. It dealt specifically with building code provisions touching components or systems and it said that they cannot be different from, which is the exact language that the legislature enacted and has consistently reiterated over the course of decades. It's interesting because over the interim, we had a group of cities and lobbyists from different interested parties, and there's more than one community, one city, more than one city in the metro area and outstate that says the Morris v. Sachs opinion did not affect their ability whatsoever to enforce property maintenance. They, in fact, said we don't need any changes at all. So one of those communities I know, and I'm not going to say because they're not here to speak for themselves, but they are a first-ring suburb. And they specifically said, we have enough authority already. The Morris v. Sachs opinion did nothing to us, did not affect our ability to enforce property maintenance. So representing the landlords, multi-housing, and I can't speak for the realtors and the builders, but I know that we've been working with them on this. All of us think property maintenance is important. We all want properties to be maintained, and we all live in communities where we want our housing stock to be maintained. And what the Saltzman Amendment does is specifically state that cities do have that authority, even though we believe they have that authority without that language. They just can't exceed the building code, which is what the legislature has consistently reiterated as an important policy for the state.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just very briefly, I mean, it is these concerns that forms a basis for the inclusion of property maintenance and rental licensing, a simple amendment to sub G here. So that's a part of our original proposal, is to just merely recognize the authority of municipalities to have those property maintenance codes and rental licensing.
I guess I'm a little frustrated because this is a second year we've been looking at this, and we've consistently said we're not going to decide it in this room. Go build a bill that's going to work, and we're here at the 11th hour. And I know it's like that old song, I'm my own grandpa. It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so. You remember that one? Oh. You guys will remember it, do you?
Just sing it.
I tried, but I'm not. But I mean, what do we do today? Pass something out of here, and then expect another committee to do it tomorrow or Friday or something? I suppose. I've always thought we should. Okay, if that's what it takes, usually we try to do our work here and work it all out. But what's your pleasure, Senator Sparks? You want to add the amendment, then work in progress? And
Mr. Chair, I think I share many of your same frustrations. I think that typically not, this is not the way this committee or many committees like to run. We like to come together with something that we can move forward on. And as you say, sometimes this is certainly not going to be my re-election bill. I think it has a lot more to do with St. Paul and Minneapolis and first-ring suburbs. But it is an important piece of legislation. And again, I think the longer that we continue to be at odds with one another, and the Department of Labor, I think, gets put in kind of a hard position. I don't know. I mean, again, it's up to the will of the committee, but I think if, you know, we can continue to keep talking, if we add Senator Saltzman's amendment, it's certainly not going to stop things. We do have a deadline of Friday, and I need to go to at least one more committee that I know of. So I wouldn't oppose it, but I guess I'd let the committee decide how they feel on the A2 amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tavassoni.
Senator Sparks. Since it sounds like it's moving, you want it to move forward in one form or another, would you rather have it move forward in the form that you introduced it or with the amendment? Because it can be worked on without the amendment also.
With or without, that's a good question. You want the amendment added or not at this time?
I prefer not.
I don't know if it's a kind of a compromise. Little copy.
I need to kind of look around the table again and see where some votes are.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I think the real question is, Senator Sparks, do you want the amendment on your bill and move your bill out, or would you like your bill to fail? Yeah, the answer.
I didn't look at that option.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I think we like the amendment and continue to move this bill along.
Okay, then we're going to. Anybody in the audience opposed to the amendment? I suppose there is, but. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sparks, since you have a work in progress, I'd like to add a little more work for us to have in progress. And members, I want to apologize because I do have this in bill form. It was a late introduction, so I wasn't able to move it forward on its own, and that is totally either my or Representative Eakin's fault because we've been working on this since last summer. But I'd like to offer the A1 amendment and have that passed out. And while it's being passed out, I'll talk a little bit about it. This is an issue that we've been working on with our electricians in the department. I've talked to Mr. Joachim and Mr. Williamson about this a fair amount and not having a lot of progress. In the past, power pole disconnects were required for animal agriculture and where there were areas of excess dust or moisture accumulation. Somehow, in the last year or so, there was a change made to the code that was, according to the department, would require these disconnects for all agriculture facilities. And in the confusion that they talk about with codes, I really am having a difficult time understanding their argument as to why this change has occurred, and I don't think it is necessary. And it adds a significant amount of cost onto any addition to these facilities. And the other thing is having a disconnect is not always good because it's a break in the line, and it adds another point for contacts and maintenance issues. And so I would like to adopt, if the committee would, the A1 amendment onto Senator Sparks's bill. And if you read on page 2, line 29 to 33, that these power disconnects, which is what this Article 547 of the National Electric Code deals with, would be required where there's a presence of excess accumulations of dust or dust with water, corrosive atmosphere, or animal confinement buildings, which is what the electricians in my area have been operating under for the last number of years, and currently they have had facilities that they have had been rejected for approval in these other situations because the code, according to Minnesota, they feel requires this. Other states surrounding us do not, and so I don't know if Mr. Joachim wants to talk about this or not, but I would move the adoption of the A1 amendment. I have talked to Senator Sparks about this, and he can speak for himself, but I think he's agreeable.
Mr. Joachim, on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. I believe this amendment, Senator Skoy, is that this is part of the new electrical code that we adopted probably a year ago or so, and this is a change from what it used to be. So this is an additional requirement that is in the new electrical code that the other states around us aren't currently doing, correct?
Chair and Mr. Joachim, I believe that is the net effect of this, which is returning us to the practice that the state had prior to the adoption of the new electrical code.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
All right, you're not really fighting this too hard, are you there, Mr. Joachim?
Mr. Chair, committee members, the new electrical code was adopted by the electrical board. The board had a number of provisions that were requested to be amended. They turned down all of the proposed amendments to the code to change some of the new requirements that came into the electrical code. So that was their choice, not the department's choice, Mr. Chair.
Well, and Mr. Chair and members, there is some confusion about this electrical code. In the background that this electrician that I've been working with has provided me, one of the state inspectors sent this request to the National Code Board that makes these determinations, And as far as I can read in what the National Electrical Code decided is they rejected this request that we require these disconnects at all agriculture facilities. Now, as I read what Mr. Williamson has been forwarding me with regard to Minnesota code, it says that it does. But my point is that in a lot of cases, these disconnects are not a positive but a negative because there isn't any excess water or dust around to require it, and they are an additional maintenance item. And anytime you break the line, you know, you've got another set of contacts and all of that stuff to maintain. So I think that we, you know, I'm listening to Senator Sparks say that he's continuing to work on this, and I certainly, you know, have every intention of continuing to work on this, but it would help my effort if we are able to adopt the A1 amendment.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Contractors of the National Electrical Contractors Association. I'm willing to work on this issue with you, Senator. I do have a concern, a couple of things. Minnesota has for decades adopted the National Electrical Code in its entirety without any exemptions, and we're very proud of that fact, and we work very hard at the national level to get things in there so that it's good for Minnesota. Number two, we have a Board of Electricity which deals with these code issues, and I'd like to take the issue there so we can work on it there so that they can properly be addressed by people who are knowledgeable in the electrical industry.
Senator Scoy appears to be knowledgeable today on this issue.
I am not, Senator.
Any further discussion on the Scoy amendment? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. The work in progress bill is moving along. Anybody in the audience? Apparently, you're going to have another day. I believe it's Friday. And is it local? What's the committee?
Mr. Chair, I believe, yeah, that needs to go to state and local government.
Okay, any further discussion? Senator Sparks moves. Senate file, whatever it is. 2759 as amended. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. I usually say good work, but I... no, I'm sorry. No, you've put a lot of work into this. I know you guys have one. Well, anything else? Are we done for the... Okay, I think that's it for this committee. Thank you all for your hard work this session. And you too, Gerlach.
For the committee?
For today, anyway. Meeting's adjourned.